Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 125 for comics released on December 30th, 2009. Note I say released and not originally released. This was a skip week. Only one new comic was released. That, of course, was Blackest Night number 6. And given how popular that is, we're going to kind of assume that if you haven't read it by now, you don't mind spoilers. Because this is coming out about a week and a half, 2 weeks after the comic itself. So, but we're going to talk about Fall of the Hulks Alpha, which was originally released on December 3rd, but had a variant cover edition released on the 30th. And Angel 28, which also was released earlier in the month on the 16th, but had a variant cover edition on the 30th. So, we still managed to cover a DC and a Marvel and another comic that were released on the 30th, despite only one new comic coming out. And since this was our 125th episode, I kind of wanted to stick with our format. Shall we get into Blackest Night number 6, Bob?
Sure. Now, I've been loving Blackest Night, and I didn't dislike this story by any stretch. It seemed thinner than some of the other issues, and when I actually countered it, and I don't have the other issues sitting here with me, but it just seemed like DC had always on $3.99 books gone out of their way to give 30 pages a story, and it turned out that this one was only 23 pages. There's a whole bunch of house ads at the end for the different Blackest Night skip month titles, but I mean those are really, you know, house ads. But the story was less than previous issues.
I would agree with that, and not only did it seem thinner in terms of the page count, but in terms of how much story was told, because I kind of felt this issue almost went in like a real-time manner during the 10 or 15 minutes or whatever I spent reading it. And that's not a bad thing. On the one hand, that is actually kind of cool, but it kind of lacked that larger canvas that some of the previous issues had, where some of it's in space, some's on Earth, some takes place now, and then a little later, you know, time progresses. I felt this was a between the commercial breaks part of a TV show versus a full episode, which is kind of how I'd felt the other issues were.
I like the resolution of, you know, at the end of 5, we're left with the Black Ring chasing the Flash. You know, it like the Black Rings get a lot of the other heroes who have been resurrected.
Mm-hmm.
So Wonder Woman and Green Arrow and Superman and, you know, it seems like everybody, all the big characters in DC have been dead at one point or another and come back. And it's this, you know, okay, well, the Black Rings are going after people who've also been resurrected from the dead. But, you know, Flash takes off running and the Rings chasing him. And I kind of liked the way that he got around that with, you know, just kind of like jumping a couple of seconds into the future and, you know, severing that link because he vanished, you know, from when they were chasing him. So that was kind of cool. I like that.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool, and you're right. That was a great cliffhanger for the last issue. This one, to me, kind of felt like they had progressed the story just enough to do, I don't want to say the other side of that cliffhanger, but okay, we've got the bad guys, you know, the previously resurrected heroes now being Black Lanterns. Now let's get who they're going to face off with. And to a degree, this cliffhanger almost felt like just a and another thing to the last cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. Versus its own new, have progressed the story to the next story point. So for me, that's part of why this felt a little bit thinner in terms of story content. There's quite a bit that happens here and quite a bit of good stuff that happens here. And while I would say this is the weakest issue of the bunch, it was still great.
It's still pretty good. Yeah, it's still pretty good.
And let's face it, this series is a high bar to reach every issue. Because I felt the first 5 were 5 out of 5s, no questions asked. This one I'm kind of on the fence at the moment between a 4+ or a 5-. I haven't really decided.
I went with a 4 on it myself. I thought it did fall below the bar of the other issues. But still, a really good issue. I mean, a 4 is a... is a really good comic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So nothing there. But, you know, the previous issues I've been a lot more wowed by than this one. But, you know, it's like by issue 6 of most other crossovers, I'm, you know, creeping down to the low 3s in my interest level. So,
exactly.
You know, the fact that this is still a solid 4+ is, you know, quite a feat.
Yeah, nothing they should be ashamed of. I mean, most issues have had of the series have had something, you know, one or two moments that is just, wow, that's cool. For me, the one in this issue was Ganthet welcoming himself into the Green Lantern Corps. I just thought that was a kind of a cool moment and kind of a hilarious one. Now, I don't think he really should need a power ring, but, you know, whatever. It's if he wants one, cool, more power to him. But when they had almost the second half of the book devoted to the rings, the different corps kind of deputizing people for 24 hours or what have you, I thought that was really cool, really interesting. But man, some of the picks they had, I don't know if I agree with. And
let's see if the ones that bothered you are the same ones that bothered me. The one that bothered me the most was Mira.
Before we get to what bothers us, I want to point out that when Wonder Woman is getting picked for Love, that Carol Ferris, Star Sapphire, points out that the ring needs her, and it's her because nobody loves the planet more than her. So she's the epitome of love on Earth. Okay, so that right there sets the bar. And yeah, Mira was one of the ones I had the biggest problem with because she seemed like a really odd or convenient choice just because, okay, let's put her in the story, whatever. When I think of who would epitomize or personify rage in the DC universe, now granted, that's a harder choice for DC than Marvel. Marvel would be the Hulk, no question asked. But in DC, Mira wouldn't even be on my list.
Yeah, and it's just like, well, you know, they went through some story contrivances, you know, at least he went through some story contrivances to, you know, show her being pissed off about stuff and, you know, to, like, at least make it make some sort of sense within the context of the story. But it was quite a stretch, I thought.
I thought so, too. And if you go back to the opening splash with the credits, on that third panel, you see in the background Starfire. She's somebody I could see doing the personification of rage.
Yeah, because when she's fighting, you know, she can get that way, right?
Yeah,
so, yeah, I see that.
She was one I might have picked. Hank Hall, the original Hawk, because they've already shown you can take a Black Lantern and kind of save them or what have you. I could see maybe Hawkman or somebody, but Mira just seemed like a
out of left field choice, yeah.
Exactly. Well, and not only that, but one that if you've are familiar with the DC Universe, a casual reader, whatever, and you're picking up the Black Lantern, or the series, and to follow the Black Lantern stuff, aside from how Mira had been very well established in previous issues here, aside from that, you'd be like, who the heck is Mira? Now, granted, yeah. Geoff Johns did a very good job reintroducing her, reestablishing her, reasserting her as a viable character, so I'm okay with that, but she did seem like an odd choice. The other one, there were a couple others I had problems with. Now first off, the ones I did not have problems with. Wonder Woman, okay, Violet, I could see that.
I thought that was a little contrived myself. I mean, I just never, and maybe I can see it, but I mean, I just never see her as, you know, the epitome of love, you know.
They've referenced that a few times or whatnot in her own book and a few other places, so it had at least been kind of set up before. Would she have been my first choice? Probably not, although I'm not sure who would have been. Lex Luthor as the Orange Lantern, not one I would have considered, but man, it fits perfectly. It's like, that one I'll buy, no problem. Sold, you know? The Yellow Lantern, Scarecrow just felt like too obvious of a choice in some respects. Now, granted, I could see the ring going immediately to Arkham because one of those inmates has got to be the pick. And they had already set up in the past that the Joker's kind of disqualified because he's just so nuts. But I would think the Joker instills more fear than Scarecrow or Zaz or some of these other villains. Maybe I just don't take the Scarecrow seriously enough. But that just seemed a little... either too obvious or too on the nose or something.
I didn't mind the Scarecrow. The one only one that I really had a problem with was Mira. The other ones, I mean, you know, Flash and Hope.
Superman's right there.
Yeah.
Superman should have been the Blue Lantern, hands down.
Flash was a little bit of a stretch, and I think it's just because this series is kind of focusing around Flash and Green Lantern, so they want to put him there.
I'm not saying he's a bad choice. He's just not my top choice. He makes sense, but seems like an also-ran. Pardon the pun. Indigo, Adam, that's another one I felt out of left field.
I like seeing him in the outfit, though. Kind of harkens back to that Sword of the Atom days.
Yes, and I love that. I thought that was a really cool callback for those who catch it. And, you know, it fits nicely, but I just don't think of him as the most compassionate person on the planet or something. But part of that is, like Mira, he's been kind of out of play for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I don't know who I would have picked for most of these. Gut feeling is for the red one, I might have picked somebody from JSA or JSA All-Stars. They got one or two characters that are just generally ticked off and kind of, you know, enraged on a regular basis. The other thing that was not clear to me...
Wildcat, for instance.
Exactly. Or, you know, Damage or...
Damage, yeah.
Or Nuclon or, you know, a few of those. The one thing that was not clear to me at the end of the issue was who was going to be representing the Green Lantern Corps. Was it going to be Hal or was it going to be Ganthet? And I'm kind of hoping it's Ganthet. But either way would work. You know, I felt this was a good issue. A very strong, better than a lot of what I read, but compared to previous issues of Blackest Night, didn't quite measure up. But again, when you've got a series of 5 out of 5 issues, you know, one after another after another after another after another, you got to figure sooner or later something's going to fall a little shy of the mark. I was not disappointed by this, but was not as blown away as I have been by previous issues. The other thing I felt was, particularly around the first couple of pages, the art wasn't quite as good as it has been on previous issues. I think it's not as good as Ivan Reis can do. I mean, I think this may be why he needs a little more time for the final two issues or something. And given all the...
It might be why they put out an issue that's, you know, 7 pages shorter than normal, too.
And this has got to be a tough grind for an artist, no question asked, and he's doing a great job. Even where I thought things were a little shakier at the beginning, I still thought it was really good art, but just a little rough in a few places, and maybe not as finished as he might have liked had he had a little more time or something. You know, I'm looking forward to the final two issues of this series. You know, they're doing some great stuff here.
One thing that I'm kind of curious about, and I look forward to seeing how Geoff Johns kind of goes with it, but, you know, you got, like, these thousands upon thousands of Black Lanterns swarming all around, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, okay, the rings from the other cores now can replicate themselves. And, okay, so we get, like, one extra lantern from each core, but it's like, okay, you know, we got, like, one extra lantern from, like, every one of the lanterns, like, created another one or something, and you just see this big mass of the other lanterns or something, but it's just like, you know, okay, now it's,
you know, actually
14 against 40 million or something, you know?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I had misread that a little. I was thinking that the rings were sort of leaving those guys to get new hosts, not that they had cloned the ring. Clear as day right there. I mean, now that I see it.
I thought that they said that the rings have the capability to replicate themselves, so.
They do, but that's when Ganthet's getting his own green ring.
I just kind of continued that on. You know,
yeah, well, and again, when you see the red one cloning itself, and same with the others, the yellow and stuff, it's clear what's going on. I was just taking that as the ring was leaving them. I read it wrong is what it came down to. But you're right. Okay, now we've got 14. So I guess that means Ganthet and these guys. Okay. Yeah, Ganthet and Hal and stuff. And then presumably the Indigo tribe will come back with everybody else. I'm more curious where this planet came from that's a Black Lantern.
That's Mogo.
Did Mogo die?
At some point in one of the issues, I think...
I guess they did kill him.
The Black Lanterns like attacked him, and he turned into a Black Lantern.
This is such a big story; it's hard to keep track of all the plot points on it. I am curious where the Dead Man stuff is going too. So, good stuff. This series, of course, continues to top the charts in terms of sales, and I think deservedly so. I'm real curious. Again, where they're going to leave off with this and what kind of exit strategy they've got, and, you know, in terms of maybe leaving some of these rings in play, you know, in the DC universe after this series ends. This seems like good kind of universe expansion, mythos expanding stuff. And I hope it's not that these other cores get forgotten shortly after this series ends.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to move on to Fall of the Hulks Alpha.
Yes. I'm glad I read this before Gamma.
Well, kind of comes before Gamma, but...
I know, but I felt...
I liked it a lot.
I did, too. Really good. I thought it was so different from... Alpha and Gamma, to me, was like black and white, or in this case, white and then black. The way they did this intelligentsia and kind of retconned it back into the Marvel Universe history, that's the kind of thing that could be really annoying if done poorly, but man, it was so well done, made so much sense, and was just such a smooth fit into the tapestry of the Marvel Universe. I'm like, hey, this is really cool. And that goes down to, you know, Jeff Parker having a understanding and a respect for the history of the Marvel Universe, and adding to the mythos and not trying to correct or undo or take away from anything that was already there.
Yeah, I mean, for people, I mean, because I'm familiar with a lot of the incidents that they're, like, you know, sliding it into, and it was actually pretty cool the way that they did it. And I liked seeing the different eras of costumes, and, you know, it's over the course of, you know, quite a long time in the Marvel Universe, but it was kind of neat seeing the kind of tour through the Marvel Universe with these bad guys and what they're doing. And I even liked that part where it's like, oh yeah, you know, these guys, you know, it's like the intelligentsia are like reconstituting, you know, villains like Sandman when he gets taken down. And it's like, you know, these guys probably think they're immortal because you know, they keep bringing them back so they can pester the heroes. That was kind of neat.
I thought that was really cool. It might have been nice if they had a couple of footnotes here and there as to which issues they were, you know, inserting this back into or referring to or whatever. I don't think that not having those is a weakness or anything, but this is one where director's cut could be really kind of cool.
But, you know, Jeff Parker, you know, I'm thinking he's a great writer. You know, he's been doing the Agents of Atlas stuff and doing a really good job there. He's just knocked it out of the park on this one. He's... kind of underrated, at least in my mind. I'm getting more and more respect for the guy each time I read something that he's putting together. So, well, he did a really nice job on this.
He did a brilliant job on this, because what I liked is this is one that's kind of a, again, almost entire backstory kind of an issue where we're being, in places, narrated this is how things progressed, but it was an excellent blend of narration while actually seeing the story unfold. You know, we get a few voiceover things to kind of bridge the gaps and move us forward in time, but then we're back into the scene, things play out there, and we're watching these events unfold. We're not told that they unfolded, which is a somewhat subtle distinction, I guess, but for me a very important one, because I feel like I'm witnessing the story, not witnessing a recap.
Yeah, you're in the story, right? And that's we've talked about that before when... You know, like one of the key ones, like the last issue of Civil War, mm-hmm. where they, like, instead of having you in the moment of events, they tell you about a whole bunch of stuff that happened. And I don't like that story device as much as just being in the moment with the story.
Yeah, and this was really in the moment the entire way through with a voiceover narration, again, to give it the context it needs and... again, those kind of editorializations of, yeah, these guys think they're immortal because we keep rescuing them without their knowledge sort of thing. And again, it was a great blend, very effective, and in a single issue, I think they kind of introduced or reintroduced these characters in the intelligentsia, gave a really solid background for their motivation, why they're there, why they're a team, how they interact, that sort of a thing. And, I mean, this issue covered a hell of a lot of ground. I thought it was interesting they felt the need to put the official Handbook of the Marvel Universe pages in the back. I thought that was a smart move for more information, but I certainly didn't think it was required reading at all to understand the story. So this was one that, to me, while it could have been something that went horribly, horribly wrong of, okay, let's force this into the history of the Marvel Universe because we're going to need it for this event or whatever, and one that, again, could have been just a train wreck, Jeff Parker did such an outstanding job on it. The art by... Who did the art on this? This was Paul
Pelletier.
Yeah, excellent art. I mean, this guy knows what he's doing, too. I mean, they had a really solid yet completely underrated and under-the-radar creative team, I think. I mean, they're starting to get some recognition, but they're not the top-name people that their talent kind of would warrant. To me, this was a 5 out of 5, hands down.
Yeah, I give it a 5 also. Really nicely done issue. And you know, really nice counterpoint to the next one that we can talk about. Now, I will point out on the variant cover that they came out with, I think that they just shipped a whole boatload of that variant cover. It was just like anybody who wants one can get one. Because I went to the comic shop on that day, and there was just like a big stack at normal price of the variant cover of Alpha. Whereas that Angel issue that we'll talk about in a little while, I didn't even see that variant cover in the store. The variant cover of Angel is like a, you know, New Year baby kind of, you know, New Year's kind of thing. And I don't know what kind of retailer incentive thing that they had on that, if you had to buy like a zillion copies of Angel or who knows what. But, you know, Comics, Toons, and Toys that I go to, I mean, they buy a lot of comics. I did not see a single one of those.
I think I saw the variant for Angel over at Tribe, but I could be wrong on that. I'm pretty sure I did, though. I wasn't really looking for the variant on Gamma. I got the regular, you know, covers for both.
But I was just curious because, you know, we were doing the skip week thing with the variant covers, so I was like, oh, let me take a look at least at these variant covers. And it's like I didn't even see the one for Angel. Whereas the Alpha one, it was actually a pretty nice variant cover. Although the Alpha and Gamma, the regular covers, bookend each other and kind of go together.
Yeah. So, well, you know, it's funny because at the end of Alpha, we've got this kind of a teaser that we're going to learn who the Red Hulk is. I thought it was really cool, and it got me interested in all that. Then I go into to Follow Hulk's Gamma. And, man, just from the recap page, I can tell this isn't going to be as good as the Alpha issue. There's a kludginess, quasi-TV recap-ish sort of a thing going on here that just did not work. And then we flip the page and we get Doc Samson, CSI psychic, with the, let's look at this puddle and tell you how the entire fight scene went.
Well, again, it's just what we were just talking about. It's the style here is a lot of... we're telling you about things that happened instead of things happening. I mean, it was interspersed, but there was a lot of retrospection and narration and other kind of things. And the other thing that's just really, really wearing thin with me is the whole, you know, who is Red Hulk? And it's like you keep on teasing and keep on teasing and you just don't. You know, maybe someone who's like hardcore, because they give some more clues about it, but at a certain point, it's like, I just don't even care anymore. You know,
well,
it's like,
I felt they didn't so much give clues here, so much as telegraph possible, you know, suspects or whatever. The minute we see Cap or Bucky, you know, familiar soldier sort of a thing, wow, that might be the Red Hulk's alter ego. It was so subtle. You know, and This entire issue lacked a certain subtlety or grace to it. And, I mean, for me, it really came down to when you go to the staple there, and you get this two-page spread. Now, the art is by John Romita Jr. Now, I'm not always a huge fan of his style, but the guy's a master artist. I'm not going to knock him at all. And nobody writes a double-page spread for an artist to do like Jeff Loeb. I mean, he'll toss a splash page in at the drop of a hat. And I felt that, well, it was a really pretty picture, a really nice pinup page, that sort of a thing. The flow of the story here, just overall, wasn't working as well as it could have and should have. You know what I mean? This was one of... It's... With one image, they're trying to allude to the entire Hulk thing, you know, battles over the year and whatnot, and they kind of do, kind of don't. It's, I don't know. I was overall disappointed with the writing in this issue and felt it was clunky and a bit pedestrian and these days on par with what Jeff Loeb is doing, but you go back to, you know, before his son died, go back a couple of years, and Jeff Loeb, I think at that point, was a stronger writer.
I think maybe it's just, he does a lot of the TV stuff, and maybe, I'm just guessing, I don't know anything about this. It's just, you know, maybe he doesn't give it the kind of attention that he used to, or he lost some of it. And it's just personal, you know, for me, but I find that I just, where, you know, I look at Jeff Parker and say, wow, I really like how Jeff Parker writes, you know, a story. I really don't care for Jeff Loeb's writing style.
It does feel like he's phoning it in. Whether he is or not, it to me, it comes across.
It just doesn't sync up with how I like a story. You know, maybe there are people, you know, like anything. You know, some people are going to love anything. And then other people are going to look at that same thing, and for almost the same reasons that person A will not like it, they'll love it. And it's like, you know, what are you talking about? That was great, you know. But for me, I'm not a big fan of the Loeb writing.
But you're right. There are going to be some people out there that think Gamma was the 5 out of 5 and Alpha was, gee, what a waste, which is kind of the exact opposite of how I feel. But, you know, hey, everyone's entitled to their opinion. And should, you know, enjoy what they enjoy with, and not feel bad about that. If people are loving this, that's great. I'm happy for them. You know, I got no problem with that. I did feel that there was just less story in Gamma than there was in Alpha.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, what's interesting is we had counted the pages for both. And there were actually more pages in Alpha, but fewer panels for that story than there was here in Gamma. It averages, let's see, there was 29 pages of story here in Gamma with, I counted 116 panels, so an average of about 4 per page. In Hulk Alpha, there was 31 pages, so 2 more story pages, but only 94 panels, so that averaged to about 3 per page. But there were such different types of stories. Again, Alpha doing a recap of history, and here kind of doing a eulogy for a particular character, for the most part.
What I found interesting was, you know, the Marvel versus DC. Marvel, historically, especially on kind of event or, you know, kind of one-shot books like this, has given its readers the shaft on page count and said, oh, here, you know, suck it. Take a 22-page story for $3.99. Whereas here with this one, you know, Alpha was 31 pages and Gamma was 29 pages. So they really gave you your money's worth on these $3.99 books. And then you flip over to Blackest Night and it's DC, who almost exclusively in the past on $3.99 books has given you 30 pages, and they flip back and give you only 23. So it's just kind of weird.
I think we're going to see some shakedown on page count and pricing and stuff this year, because I've noticed in the January previews, things like Booster Gold are dropping to the $2.99 price point and losing the backup feature. So I think both publishers are trying to play around with the price per page, how much they can put into a comic, and all that stuff. So I think we're still in a little bit of a transition period there. But hopefully it'll work out to our advantage at the end when it's all said and done.
So I gave Gamma a 3.
I gave it a low 3, and I was really tempted to give it a 2. And there were
I gave it a 3 mostly because the Romita art, frankly. I mean, it's like that one panel, you know, the staple with the FF versus the Hulk, you know, that alone, you know, that could be a poster. I love,
well, that
I love
be
Romita's
a
art, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, he does a nice job, so.
I actually was...
If this had had, like, you know, Ed McGuinness doing the art, you know, nothing wrong with Ed McGuinness, just I'm not a giant Ed McGuinness fan. It would have been a 2 for me. But I love John Romita's art, so.
Yeah. The only thing about this issue that really frustrated me was the handbook pages for the Red Hulk and the Red She-Hulk.
Oh, yeah, with all the redactions.
Everything was redacted but their first appearance. Yeah, it's like, what's the point? I mean, come on.
It's just a waste of a page.
They should have told us whatever, essentially a recap.
Wink, wink, nod, nod. You know, it's like, ha, 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 you know, we're redacting everything. Ha, ha, you don't know who they are.
Well,
you
know, and I get that we don't know who they are, but the real name.
Tell us what their powers are. Why can't you tell us about their powers?
Well,
why can't you tell us how much they can lift or something? You know,
yeah,
like,
their real name should have been listed as currently unknown or whatever, and they should have told us a recap of what we do know about them. They should have used this as an an opportunity, particularly for the Red Hulk, to show, hey, we have told a lot of stories. We have given you some information about this guy. He's not a complete mystery. Yet they chose not to. So I thought that was, again, a waste of 2 pages. And they could have been put to much better use if they'd actually spent a little time writing some content.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to Angel 28?
Yeah. Now, we picked Angel 28. It's actually a good coincidence. I mean, you know, we got it because they were putting out this special cover on that day. So there, something actually came out. Plus, it's also Bill Willingham starting his run on Angel. So it's a jumping on. I take it as it's a good jumping on point to this title. And
I take it as it should have been a good jumping off.
Well, I was going to get to that.
I know.
It should have been a good jump. It was an opportunity to be a jumping on point, because I had dropped Angel a long time ago, and I felt that this issue was a complete failure as far as getting me interested in picking up this book on an ongoing basis.
I would agree, because I dropped this around issue 17 or 18 of After the Fall, or whatever the subtitle had been at that point. Now, I've watched the entire run of the show, and, you know, I picked this up because it was Willingham's first issue, and so we could discuss it for the show, and I have to agree entirely, this was a really missed opportunity for both IDW and Willingham, where they do this promotional push of, hey, he's getting on this book, we got a new writer, et cetera, et cetera. And as an introductory issue, as a reintroductory issue, I mean, because again, I'm only behind, I only skipped like 10 issues or something. I was surprisingly lost in part of this story. Now, I kind of want to split this issue in half, because the opening scene with Connor, I have one set of views on, and then the other part with everybody else, I had completely different views on. The opening stuff with Connor, Angel's son, they give a good sense of who this character is, a really good recap of the highlights of his backstory. It had some good action. It had some cool stuff. It was good. It was really well done. And then we cut to back at the hotel, not that it's really labeled as such, but to a building where we get Spike and the rest of the gang. Spike's never even named in this scene. I have no idea who this James character is. Presumably he came in through the 10 issues I missed. The two women in this scene are never named. I think it's the character Elizabeth Rahm played, and then the Lightning Girl or whatever, but it's completely unclear in this. There's no establishing shots. There are too many close-ups.
This is funny, because, you know, it's like I'm looking, because you watched the entire series, Angel. I am a... casually interested. I mean, I haven't watched every issue of Angel. In fact, I watched the first couple of seasons, and I just never got around to watching any more Angel after that. I mean, I'm kind of aware, and I'm interested in the character and everything. But, I mean, there is a storytelling style in which you introduce the reader to your characters and who they are, and you make them care about them. And this utterly failed in that, whereas, you know, you at least, you know, I'm looking at it, it's like, I kind of figured out, okay, Connor, I guess at some point Angel had a son, and, you know, I
well,
got
that. Well, they actually
revealed
that in the storyline.
Yeah, exactly. And that was well done. But once you got out of that part and you get back to, you know, and I didn't even know, okay, so it's this hotel or whatever. I knew Spike, and I knew Gunn, and I knew Illyria, but all these other characters in, like, this flying fish thing, whatever the hell that is, and, you know, it's like I was just completely lost in the back half of this issue, and it was a lot of just dialogue. My opinion on this issue is it's probably, if you're a hardcore Angel fan, that's exactly who this is playing to. And, I mean, I'm not saying it's going to – I wouldn't even expect it to win over someone who had never read Angel before and, you know, has no interest in Angel. But I'm interested in Angel. I know something about Angel, and I couldn't get into this. So, I mean, to me it was like – it seemed like it was tailored for the hardcore fan. And if you're a casual fan and you're a little higher level of casual fan than me, so that's why I was interested, you know, because I know you had seen a lot more Angel than I had. And I dropped the monthly book a lot earlier than you did. I think I dropped it around issue 7 or 8 after that first arc.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I looked at this and it's like, Willingham is normally a really, you know, I won't say he's not a, you know, good writer here, but I think the choice that was made to just cater it towards the hardcore fan instead of trying to be a little more inclusive. Maybe they're figuring you're not going to buy this unless you're a hardcore fan anyway, so don't bother.
I'm not sure I would say it's a matter of being a hardcore fan so much as being an existing reader of this particular title. Because, again, I think there are hardcore fans of the TV show that they could have used this as a good, you know, jumping on point into the series.
And that's where I was unaware, because I didn't know, since I hadn't watched, like, at least the last 3 or 4 seasons of the show, I had no particular idea which of these characters and concepts had existed in the show or not. So, you know, I defer to you on that.
Yeah, well, and again, this James character, I'm assuming, came from somewhere in the last 10 issues of this series. So it's not a question of you know, have you memorized every episode or not. Even that's not going to help you. And the failing here isn't that they're using characters that aren't from the TV show. It's that they're not introducing the characters, regardless of where they were from. Spike is not named. The only names that come out is Gunn refers to James by name, and Connor refers to Gunn and Illyria by name. Nobody else in this hotel scene is named at all. You know, add to that the lack of an establishing shot, and it's just, I want to say clumsy writing. You know, it lacked accessibility that this issue really, really should have had. And there were two aspects of this that made this story feel unbelievably short. Like, what do you mean it's over already? Part of it was the page after the staple is the last page of the story. And the other part was the page at the staple, the right-hand page there, is the start of the third scene of the comic, essentially. You've got the extended scene with Connor at the beginning, which I think was at least a 4 out of 5, possibly a 5 out of 5 if it was just that quality and stuff for the whole issue. Then you've got the hotel scene, which I thought tanked horribly.
That just totally killed the momentum of the story. I mean, that was the thing. It's like that whole action sequence at the beginning, if, you know, that caliber of both action as well as having enough in the story so that I could understand what was going on and get with it had been carried out throughout the entire issue, it would have been a much higher one. You know, if they could have had another sequence equivalent to that and then the last page, I would have definitely come back for the next issue.
Well, yeah, because
as it is, I don't care.
That last scene, which is a 2-page thing, is essentially kind of that final moment or two of a TV episode where it's the, let's do a quick reveal to get you hooked and curious about the next issue. It's that final story beat on an episode of Lost kind of a thing. And that was good. But man, that scene in the hotel killed this issue.
And for me, what it was I really liked that last page that he put in, and I am very curious as to, wow, how did this happen and what what is going to go on. However, my fear would be if I come back and pay $3.99 for another issue, am I going to be completely mystified by 50% of it like I was in this one, and I don't care to risk my $3.99 in that fashion, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree with you entirely. This is something I don't have future issues on order. This issue was not good enough to hook me, to make me add it to my DCBS order. If I'd already ordered them, I certainly would have followed along. And on the art side, I think the artist is doing a really good job getting the likenesses, but the acting is so stiff that, again, going back to that hotel scene, it just feels clunky. Again, the irony of this to me is that opening couple of pages with Connor doing the fight scene, all that kind of stuff. The art was cool, the pacing was cool, the story was good. They toss a lot of backstory in there, a lot of information is packed in those first couple of pages. And it was such a schizophrenic issue that you look at that first scene and that last teaser scene, you come out with one view, you look at the scene between them, and it's like, what the hell happened? It's like it's almost two different creative teams that worked on this book, even though that was not the case. So, at this point, it was such a bad start to a new creator's run on the book that I'm not looking to go with it. And, you know, I would give this a 3 out of 5. But part of that is because I thought the 4-page backup story was entertaining and good. It didn't really have much context, but most of the complaints we have of them not introducing characters, not making us care about the characters and stuff, they kind of did that for me in the 4-page story. You know, here's as far as I know, a brand new character. They set the scene, give a clue for what he's doing, what his motivation is, et cetera, et cetera. All in 4 pages.
Mm-hmm.
So that helped bring up the issue for me.
I was that 4-page story completely eluded me.
Really?
I don't know who Eddie Hope is. I didn't care for the art. I mean, it's like I kind of got what was going on. I mean, it was short enough, but it's just like it didn't do it. I didn't dislike it, but it wasn't enough to bring up the general grade for the issue for me, which was a 2.
Fair enough. I guess for me, it came down to they did enough in those 4 pages that I felt they told a coherent story, gave some background on a new character and some motivation in there, and it was a tight 4-page story. Now, is it enough to bring me back? Certainly not, but compared to how clunky, again, harping on that hotel scene, how clunky that was, you know, I could have gone with a 2 on this very easily as well, is what it comes down to. It was on the verge between that 2 and that 3, and this should have been at least a 4 out of 5 or a 5 out of 5, because Willingham's a really good writer. They've got a very solid artist on this book. They just made some fundamental mistakes in the nature of the story they told, and this is stuff that the editor should have caught and pushed back on and said, hey, maybe you should introduce the characters, maybe there should be an establishing shot, maybe you should do this, that, and the other. And not dictate the story, but point out how it's not as accessible to new readers as it could and should be. So,
yeah, I mean, it was an opportunity that was missed, in my opinion. So,
Agreed. Well, I would ask what else you read this week, but I only had the one issue in my package. I can't even say box. I get this little fold-up envelope-y
thing. Well, you got
that.
Didn't you get the Siege thing?
Not from DCBS.
Oh, interesting, because I threw one in with mine.
Oh, well, they must like you better
Siege
than me.
Siege Origins.
Nope. Only thing I got was with Black
John Mayo, hosed by DCBS.
Your words, not mine, but yeah. It was actually the smallest package I ever have gotten, and obviously ever will get from DCBS, because any less...
Same thing for me. It was just like kind of like a cardboard envelope, essentially.
Yeah. So...
I caught up on a lot of... I pretty much caught up on my Marvel from previous weeks, which I had been way behind on.
Cool.
You know, some good stuff there. Up to speed on my... read the last issue of Immortal Weapons and up to speed on the War of King, Realm of Kings and cosmic stuff and Daredevil and all that kind of stuff.
I caught up on Incognito, and really that was about it, other than the couple of things I read for this episode. I'm hoping this weekend, if I have some time, to finish off Shrapnel and catch up on the Wildstorm stuff, and that'll put me current. Convenient time to have a skip week is what it came down to for me.
Yeah.
So, that do it?
That does it.
Cool.
Join us next week when we cover Suicide Squad number 67 from DC, Siege number 1 from Marvel, and Gigantic number 5 from Dark Horse Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.